Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the July 2016 Home Education Conference, held at Utah State University.
Oldest daughter was 12. I had this distinct experience with her I'll never forget. I was in the kitchen. She liked to come into the kitchen and sit on the bar stool across from the counter, and she'd come in while I was fixing dinner. Now, if you're looking at this picture and I'm frantically chopping vegetables, trying to get dinner done and served and on the table in this small window of time before kids need to go to Mutual and other kids need to go here, and so we've got to get dinner done right here, and I had just gotten home, so I had this small window of time. And now when I look back at this story, I think, why wasn't she chopping vegetables with me? But she was sitting there leisurely, you know, just watching me, and then she said this profound statement, "Mom, you're always stressed." And immediately this little defensiveness came up, and I went, "I'm not always stressed. I'm happy sometimes. I'm not always stressed." But her comment totally went to my heart, totally got me thinking, am I always stressed? So during the coming week, I took a look at what was going on with me. And I noticed, and I wanted to point out to her the times especially that I wasn't stressed. I'd say, see, I'm not stressed. See, I'm happy. I'm okay. And then there would hit a moment, and I would go, I am definitely stressed right now. This is stressed. That was a very instructive moment, because I didn't want my daughter to grow up in my shadow and see that womanhood is stressful, motherhood is stressful, homeschool is stressful, life is stressful. That's not at all what I wanted to convey to her, but in the moment, and from her perspective, she was seeing a lot of stress written over my face and my body language. So that was a very instructive experience for me. So does this look, I mean, can you relate to this? Whenever I'm driving on the freeway, I always think, gosh, all these people have places to go, things to do, and I just look at this and think, this is our world. This is the world we live in. Had a good friend last night ask me, do you think in our world today people are experiencing anxiety more than they used to? And I kind of went, I think so. How many of you, if you'd be willing to share, how many of you have actually experienced what you would consider anxiety? Okay, I'm going to raise my hand really high. Anybody ever had a panic attack? Okay, it's like when your chest gets super tight, you can't hardly breathe. You can go to sleep with it. You can wake up with it. It can come at any time. I was having panic attacks 2 weeks ago. I hadn't had them for a long time. But it comes because of what's going on around us and for not having learned or not knowing how to control that energy. This is, you know, there are only times when I feel stressed. I mean, I just love this, okay? Day and night, okay. Here's another really good one. There are times when I have said, I need to put myself in a timeout. I'll see you later, because I'm afraid of what's going to happen if I don't, right? See you later, okay? Got to get out of here. Got to take a break. A lot of times I could say, Mom, you need a timeout. So the one thing I'd really, really like to make sure that I really want all of your misperceptions and just if you think that my home is perfect, if you think that I'm always calm, if you think that, you can just wipe it right out of your head. Okay, this is something that I'm working on. I am a human being, and it makes me interesting to live with. Okay, so we all have this laundry list. I've noticed when I'm talking with people that oftentimes they give me a laundry list. Oh yeah, well I had to go do this, and then I did this, and then I was there, and then I did this, and then this, and then this, and then so I had to do this, and whew, by the time they get done talking to me, I go, I am tired. Do you ever notice that, you know, you ask people, how's it going? Oh, I'm so busy. that comes out of our mouths a lot, a lot. I'm so busy, okay? So, but how often do you hear, I'm peaceful, thanks, how are you? I mean, we laugh, right? Have you ever heard that? I'm peaceful, thanks, how are you? Okay, so maybe you can practice that next time somebody says, how are you? You can say, I'm peaceful, thanks, how are you? Or you can say, I'm wanting to be peaceful, thanks, how about you? I'm trying to be peaceful, thanks, how about you? Okay, so I think that there's something missing in our culture when we laugh at this, you know? And have you ever wondered when you ask, I have a couple of friends, and whenever I ask them, how are you? It's always, great, how about you? And I'm going, you always say great. You never say, okay, fine, tired. You just say, great, I'm excellent, I'm fantastic. Thinking, are you real? Stress is a result of how we frame the world around us. When you think of frame in the term of taking a picture, it's how we see the world. It's how we see people. It's how we see our situation. It's framing it in a certain way. I learned this word frame very powerfully about a year ago, going through a huge life challenge. I was working with a relationship coach, and he helped me to frame my life challenge in a new perspective rather than, oh great, everything's ruined, we're done, this is terrible. He helped me to see that this is beautiful, this is healing, this is a direction that you want to go. And so it's very, very important for us to learn how to frame situations in this way. Now, this comes from, I can come home from having been gone for several hours, having given my kids instructions that when they get done with lunch, they're to clean up. How many times have I given the instruction that when they're done with lunch, they're to clean up? How many times have I told them that when we get done eating, we clean up? Any meal, right? But I can come home, and I walk into the kitchen, and the fact is that it's messy. They left the food out, the counters are not wiped, there's, you know, crumbs and whatnot through their dishes throughout the kitchen. Okay, that's just information. It's neutral. Okay, and I can make the observation, oh, the kitchen is messy. However, I can frame it as, oh my gosh, they didn't listen to me. I'm so mad. They should have done that, and they better get down here right this minute. Or I can pause and say, I wonder why my obedient, competent, happy, wonderful children didn't clean up lunch. Let's go find out. I mean, gosh, somebody could have cut themselves. Somebody could have gotten hurt. You know, the neighbors could have, I don't know, all kinds of things could have happened. And so basically it's the way I perceive it and what I'm thinking about the situation. Feeling stressed out is a learned response to external situations. Stress is a learned response. We need to understand that. We're just not helplessly stressed. We have learned the response that is stress. And we feel it in our entire body. When we go into stress mode, do you know what it does to our chemistry? It puts us into a fight-flight situation. In fact, we're going to talk about this a little bit more, but there's two parts of our brain, the reactive brain and the relating brain. There are more parts, but those are the basic. The reactive part will put your body into fight-flight, and you'll get this flood of chemistry, of adrenal hormones. And you start to race, you can't relax, and you need to, it was like, I got to get out of here, I got to fight, I got to do something. So when we get into situations where that stress hormone is constant, eventually over time, it does burn your body out. We're going to talk about that in a few minutes too. So the good news, we have the power to do something about it. That's the really, really, really good news. Here's a great quote that I like. How can an internally balanced, frustrated person teach others how to clean up their act? We have to learn that ourselves first. We have to learn that ourselves first. And that begins from within. Violence only teaches violence. Stress teaches stress. And peace teaches peace. And for me, peace is entirely sufficient. Efficient. I promised in my introduction or my little description about my class that I would share a little bit of my experience. So that's, I really would like to do that. A lot of how we experience life comes because of our personality, because of our genetics, because of our, it's the nature versus nurture thing, the way, the home that we grew up in, the situations that we've had. So my story is not going to equate that if you're a homeschool mom, you're going to one day just plop over and be in bed for, you know, 2 years. That's not going to be your story, especially if you listen to what I say today and you follow it, okay? If you really honestly follow it, I promise you, you won't end up there. Well, I can't promise because we don't really know what all those unknowns are. However, I have this part of me that is just kind of a driver. I like to go at life, and I like to go at life full force with all my energy. I started running when I was 15. Absolutely loved running and distance running. And so I have lived my life much like a marathon runner. If you know anything about the difference between a marathon runner and a sprinter, their physiology is so different. Marathon runners tend to be, like if you look at the real marathon runners, the Olympic marathon runners, they're really small. Look at their faces, they're often kind of gaunt and they're really thin. And then you look at sprinters, and sprinters' bodies are powerful, muscular, and they're built and they are trained to do two different things. Sprinters go hard and fast and all out, and then they rest. Marathoners tend to just go, 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 and they don't take the rest as much. So I tended to be just like, okay, we're in this, and I'm going, and we're just going to keep going. And so I never really stopped to ask myself, is this energy level sustainable for, you know, years? Or instead, I said, we got to do this. I mean, the kids need this, and we need to do this, and we need to do that. I can't rest. I've got to keep going. I've got to keep going. Feeling this push from outside, but I could see this vision. I'm going to go for it. I'm going to go do it. So, and that coupled with my personality, coupled with some really, really challenging relationships, coupled with just a whole set of emotional stuff I brought with me from my childhood, coupled with a lot of things. And having 7 babies, 10 pregnancies, you know how it goes. The hormones up and down, the all of that. So I had a tendency not to take care of myself through most of the years of my life. Tendency to forget to eat, tendency to burn the candles at both ends, tendency to just push and not really be in touch with the needs of my body and my emotional needs. And so, anyway, it really wasn't a good scenario. So a couple of years ago, it's been 28 months ago, I had made this goal. I was turning 50 that year. So I made this goal. I'm going to go climb 10 mountains. I love to climb mountains, and usually in a season I'll get 2 or 3. But I decided for my 50th year, I was going to climb 10. And one of those was going to be Mount Whitney, you know, 14,000, you know, in California. I was so excited about this goal. I made this goal at the beginning of February, and on March 1st, and so I started upping my running mileage so that I'd be more fit. And on March 1st, I woke up and my body was feeling kind of funny. It was Sunday. I was feeling lightheaded, like profoundly lightheaded, just sitting there talking to my daughter. And then, but it never dawned on me not to go to church. And I went to church, and I led the primary music, but I noticed I didn't have much energy. I had to sit kind of leaning against the table. I'm leaning, you know, leading the music. It was my last Sunday leading the music. Went to sacrament meeting, went home from church, and went to bed. And I didn't get out of bed again for months. And come to find out, things like my blood counts had all kind of crashed, and there were all kinds of just different things that were out of whack. Anyway, it was a long road back, and I have learned a tremendous amount from the experience. But you take somebody like me who used to think, well, what if God took, you know, made it so that I couldn't run anymore because my knee hurt? You know, I had an injury in my knee because I love to run. What if I could never run again? I had never even imagined or never crossed my mind that I could possibly be debilitated by a complete health issue that just put me completely out. People did my grocery shopping. They took my kids back and forth. I couldn't walk into a grocery store. It was completely overwhelming to me. I couldn't think enough to process what to buy, what to put in my cart, how to do it. It was a completely new situation for me. And then to make it harder, I would start to get better, and I would get the okay to start to walk again, exercise, and I would start, and then I would crash. And then I said, okay, now I can go. No, crash, up, down, not knowing really what the variables were. Great thing is that just about 6 weeks ago, we figured out what it is, and now I'm being treated for it, and it's awesome. I have a genetic disorder that's called MTHFR, and so my body doesn't process folic acid and B12. And without those two nutrients, I get a little bit of it without help, but with help, I can process and do all of the functions that bodies do. But without it, it had great effect on my mental health, on my energy. I had no energy on my amino acid levels, my ability to process protein, my ability to digest. I mean, all kinds of processes. So it's been a long road to find that. I'm grateful to find it because now my family can be tested for it, which they are being, and they can be also treated for it. So it's been a blessing. It's also been extremely frustrating. And there have been a lot of good things to learn from it. And I hope to share some of those as we go through here. But along the way, I still was able to, I kept thinking, what do we do with homeschool? If I continue to be sick, what are we going to do with homeschool? And my boys, especially my fourth, it was his senior year, his junior and senior year of high school. And his education took a hit. It just did, because I was out of commission. But because I believe that we're not doing this perfectly, there's always a way. It doesn't matter if it took a hit, he still has an opportunity we can still come out of that hole. One of the things, and I didn't make a slide for this, that's super, super important to understand if you want to be still, is this, okay? It's a cycle. Thoughts lead to feelings. Feelings lead to actions. And actions lead to becoming. So say you come home from being gone like I did, and I come home and I see the kitchen a mess. I have a thought. Those lazy bums. Sorry. I was like, okay, so that's the first thought that came to my mind. It's going to be random. So what does that feeling, what feeling comes up? Anger, frustration, I'm mad, impatience, okay? And from that comes an action. You guys better get down here and clean up this kitchen, okay? And then what do I become? More stressed out, more tense. So thoughts lead to feelings. Feelings lead to actions, and actions lead to becoming, to states of being. Stormy emotions come from stormy thinking. Okay, remember the picture of the lake with the waves. Stormy emotions come from stormy thinking. So if you find yourself feeling frustrated and angry and stormy inside, you can stop and say, wait a second. What were the thoughts that led to this stormy emotion, this storm that's going on? It's not an easy thing to do at first. It actually is a practice, something that you need to do. A lot of times we have tape recorders that are going, messages and thoughts that are going through our mind, and we don't even realize they're there. And so we can't figure out why we feel depressed, why we feel sad, why we feel upset, because we're always in the state of emotion and action and reaction and becoming. So we can't really figure out what the thoughts are. Had a really, really cool experience and was very grateful to have this experience with a mentor about 6 or 7 years ago, well, probably 7 or 8 years ago. I asked to be mentored by a man who had been in, so he had been on my oral board when I was doing my graduate, defending my thesis, and he said something to me like, Angie, you're on the brink of having impact. And if you remember from my keynote, one of the things I've always wanted is to make a difference wherever I am. So that really caught my attention, and I thought, well, I'm going to ask. He must know what that looks like, so I'm going to ask him to mentor me. So he did, and I thought he was going to say, okay, when you speak, you've got to do this and this and this, and this is how we're going to market you, and now you got to write a book and all that kind of thing. Instead, this man, who is just such a dear friend now, took me on a road into understanding what my thinking and my thought process was inside to help clear out and clean out and heal what was going on inside. One of the assignments he gave me, and I swear his assignments were so hard, but he gave me the assignment of carrying a 3x5 card around in my pocket, or just like a small notebook. Basically, all I did was take an 8.5x11 sheet of paper and I folded it up. He said, I want you to tally every time you give yourself a negative thought, like a negative judgment, like I'm not good enough, or oh, I should have been doing this, and I should have this, and I was supposed to do this. Anytime I gave myself a negative comment or a negative judgment, I needed to tally it. And then just observe. He said, we're not going to do anything with it. Just observe. Don't get upset. Just observe. I carried it in my pocket all day long for 24 hours, even in the bathroom. It went with me everywhere. And I was appalled at and started to become aware of the messages I was sending to myself. And no wonder, oftentimes at that period in my life, I would drive up to my house and I kind of go like, oh, here I am again. It was kind of like going home to a prison. And it really wasn't the house. It was the thinking going on in my brain. So here's my thought process. I walk through the house. I enter the house through the garage and it come into my mudroom, which is also the laundry room. And I see the stacks of laundry or the pile. Oh, gosh, I didn't get to those yet. And then I go into the kitchen, and oh, yeah, oh, the kitchen's not all that clean, but I've got to get to that. And you walk through this, and you see all of these little reminders of what hasn't been done or what needs to be done, and, oh, therefore, I'm not that good of a person or that good of a mom, and I could be more effective. You see the children fighting, and, oh, gosh, what is wrong with me? Why can't I fix this? Okay, so do you get the picture? And eventually, it's just heavier and heavier and heavier and heavier. So doing that activity, that assignment, helped me to see really what I was doing to myself. I was creating the prison that I was living in, but I hadn't even been aware of what the thoughts were in my mind and that it was creating this heaviness in my life. So anyway, it was a powerful experience, but the good thing is that after that, we started to put in, you know, when I did a negative, I would turn it around with a positive. So if I caught myself saying, oh, gosh, I'm so dumb, okay? Honestly, thoughts like that go through my mind. I don't know, do they go through your mind? They go through my mind. I'm human. And so nod your head so I don't feel alone up here. Okay, yeah, I'm so dumb. Why couldn't I figure that out? So whenever a negative thought would come through, I'd have a positive one ready to just blast it right out. Wait a second, that's not true. I am the smartest and the most capable and beautiful woman there is in this home. Okay, so I'm the only woman that's in this home. That's the problem. I'm outnumbered. So, all right, so let's go ahead and talk about the practices. Now, there's no order to these practices, meaning I didn't order them so that the first one is the most important. Okay, I ordered them because there is a ton I could share with you, a ton. And I feel like this 1 hour is not going to do it justice, but I'm going to do the best I can with it. So, okay, but before we do that, disclaimer. These practices are not another of the things you should be doing. So I don't want you to feel like, I should be doing that. Not a reason for stress. Okay, we're not going to do the practices and get all stressed about the practices. These are just opportunities for stillness. They're practices, not perfections. We're not doing them perfectly. We're practicing. Just get in your mind, your little child practicing the piano, messing up, but they just start again. We're practicing. That's all we're doing. We're going to focus on process and journey, not product and destination. We're not trying to get anywhere very fast, although getting to be still is really fun, is really great. And take only one at a time and focus on it until it becomes part of you. So you get to choose today. And as we go through these, just see if any of them resonate with you, the one that you feel is the most important for you. I would encourage you to take that one and develop a practice and do it for 30, 40, 50, 60 days until it becomes part of you, till you love it, till you can't live without it, and then add something else. Okay, so the first one is mindfulness meditation. Again, that same mentor gave me the assignment to practice meditation. I went, okay, that's really weird, but okay, I'll do it. And he gave me a book. I mean, he told me about a book called The 8-Minute Meditation, which is super simple. It's nothing's like woo, 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 like the, you know, the Eastern Orthodox. You have to sit there with your fingers in a certain way and say, om, om. No, it wasn't anything like that. It was basically this normal person that wrote this book and westernized it a little bit. And so basically it's an 8-week program. You do it for 8 minutes a day, and it's called the 8-minute meditation. It's a very simple way to jump into meditation. So I started to practice this for 8 weeks. I did the assignment faithfully, and then I finished, and he had me write a paper that said, this is the value I got from meditation. So I wrote a beautiful paper. This was awesome. And then I promptly stopped meditating. My assignment was finished, right? And it wasn't until about 3 months later when I got hit with, this is before all of my real health challenges, but I got hit with this intense head pain that wouldn't go away, and it stayed with me for 2 weeks. I wouldn't even call it a headache. It was a sharp, stabbing pain every 5 to 10 seconds for 2 weeks. And I began to realize that, oh, I remember that one of the fruits of meditation is better health, lower blood pressure. You come out of that stress mode, like the fight-flight mode, so it helps you calm your systems down, helps you to concentrate, helps you to focus. People who meditate often become more patient simply because it expands this time of reaction. You have more time between stimulus and response. There's a whole bunch. So I began to realize that I probably need meditation, and I began to actually practice meditation on a regular basis, and I haven't stopped, and I will not stop. Mindfulness is basically becoming aware of what you're thinking. It's becoming aware of where you are and what you're doing. Have you ever had the experience of washing, you know, you're washing dishes, and while you're washing dishes, you're thinking of the 10 other places you should be and the 10 other things you should be doing? Anybody ever had that experience? And do you feel like you're just like racing, like your heart's, oh, I gotta get out of this, I gotta go do this, I gotta do this, you know, do you ever had that feeling? Okay, so mindfulness says that instead of choosing that, which is stress, you either choose to be present with washing the dishes, and you feel the warm water on your hands and the soap, and you feel the slippery dishes, and you wash them, and you rinse them, and you're just present with the dishes, doing that one thing, nothing else going through your mind, just focusing on the dishes and the water. You either focus on that or you stop. And you get out a piece of paper and you write down all the things that are going through your mind, and then you choose the one where you really need to be. And then you go and focus and be present with that one thing. So I had an opportunity to go on a backpacking trip recently, just last week. Barely made it. Doctor barely okayed it for me to go. And it was interesting because when you're on a backpacking trip, water is really, really valuable, and you use little bits of water. Because if you don't use little bits of water, then you have to go to the lake and you have to pump more water. So you use little bits of water, little bits to wash, little bits of, you know, when you wash a dish, you use this much water. You don't do a lot. And my kids would love that kind of dishwashing. And they would have been appalled at my cleanliness on the mountain seminar. Everything kind of changes when you're out there backpacking. Anyway, but what I noticed was when we got back to civilization, I went into the bathroom and the water faucet turned on. I mean, turned the water faucet on, and it was warm right away, and there was soap, and it was running there. And so I stood there and just felt the water on my hands and washed. And I thought, whoa, this is amazing. And I used 3 times the amount of toilet paper that I normally would, just because I could. Because on the mat, when you're backpacking, you can't. But I noticed, I was so mindful of, wow, I am so grateful for this water. I am so grateful for that toilet paper. I am so grateful for 4 walls around me when I'm going to the bathroom. I mean, it was just, but I noticed how I was mindful of that. But had I not had the experience of not having those things, I wouldn't have been as mindful. So mindfulness meditation, that means that you're really focused. What I'd really like to do is have you do like a 20-second meditation, okay? So we're going to do it. You can just keep your eyes open or you can close them. And all you're going to do is you're going to sit up tall. You're going to breathe deeply down into your diaphragm. And as you breathe in, you're going to say to yourself, I breathe in and I calm my body. I breathe in and calm my body. I breathe in and calm my body. I breathe out and I smile. I breathe out and I smile. Smiling is a proactive thing to do, and it sets the whole tone. You choose to smile. I breathe in and calm my body. I breathe out and I smile. Can you sense the whole shift in the whole room? So, meditation is powerful. One of the things that I've come to do that I love, and one thing that eight minute meditation doesn't do, is it doesn't bring in a spiritual aspect to it, really. But it's more to me than just calming my body. It's become something that I will oftentimes visualize the Savior coming into and sitting with me. And that's a beautiful image. It's very calming, it's very reassuring, and it's very relaxing. So anytime you are in a stressful situation, you can stop right there with the storm around you and breathe. One thing I did recently to help myself was I put a timer on my phone every 2 hours. And when that timer would go off, I would stop wherever I was. Usually I was standing, and I would stand there, close my eyes, kind of ground myself, and breathe deeply. Just breathe. And then if my 10-year-old was with me, I invited her to do it with me. If my friends are with me, I invited them to do it with me. Felt kind of funny, but we still did it. Anyway, so that's mindfulness. We need to move on. So that's mindfulness. There's so much there. But you can do it very simply just by closing your eyes and breathing deeply and focusing on your breath. Okay, real. I talked about this yesterday, and I want to talk about it just a little bit differently today in the context of just one person, just you. And also with this goes the idea of practicing compassion. So when if you remember that thinking brings emotion, and real, the acronym for real is the first, the R is recognize the emotion, okay? So you can be proactive and recognize your own emotion. Oh, I've got stormy emotion going on right now. Recognize the emotion. Try to figure out what you're, and explore the story. That's the E, explore the story. The A is attend to your needs. Am I hungry? Do I need to go to the bathroom? You laugh, but there are so many times I have just made myself get through the grocery store because if I had to stop and go to the bathroom, that means four little kids have to trail with me to the bathroom, right? No, I don't want to do that. And I have to leave the cart and whatever. So we're going to just get through the bathroom, you know, get through the store. So do I need to go to the bathroom? Do I need to rest? Do I need a break? Okay, this is practicing compassion for you. And if you don't take care of you, nobody else will. And what happens is a downward spiral where nobody else really gets taken care of either. This is, okay, you hear the scripture, love your neighbor as yourself. Friends, if we're not loving and caring and taking care of ourselves, we are not loving other people either. So ask yourself, am I hungry? Am I tired? Do I need a break? Am I too heavy, like emotionally? Do I need to laugh? Find something funny and laugh, okay? You know, recently I had an experience that was really, really cool. The cool thing about doing this is when negative emotion goes up, what happens in relationships is understanding and trust goes down. So as soon as you recognize negative emotion in somebody else or in yourself, what happens is understanding goes up and trust goes up. It's way cool. So recently, like it was in May, my children and I needed to get ready for a trip. But my boys had been gone all afternoon, and I had thought in my mind, we're going to get ready for this trip this evening when they get home. But they texted me just a few minutes before they got home and said, Mom, we want to go to the movie with our friends. And I was like, wow. That means I have to do it by myself. No, they can't go get, you know, I had this in my picture in my mind. We were going to do it a certain way. Now they wanted to change it. Well, they came in, they came home, and I was stressed because I felt like I was going to have to do it by myself. And my 18-year-old son said to me after we had a little bit of interaction, he said, "Mom, you seem stressed." You know what that did for me? I just went, "Oh." He noticed. Okay. Yes, I am stressed, and this is why. And we explored the story. I need your help, and now you want to go to the movie. How can we fix this? So then all we did was say, "Well, we'll work really hard, Mom, for an hour or two, and we'll go to the late movie. How's that?" And we did. But to have somebody recognize my emotion was powerful. I was seen, I was understood, I was heard. But we can't sit around and wait for other people to recognize our emotion. We have to be adults and go, "Oh, I'm feeling stressed. You know, let's explore the story. What can I do to attend to my needs?" Okay, so that's the real. I'm afraid I'm going to forget to tell this story, and I'm afraid I'm going to run out of time too. Go ahead. The L is lift the conversation. Yeah. So it means to acknowledge, to apologize, to affirm, anything that helps to lift. Have you ever noticed that when two people are mad, if one person sincerely apologizes, the mad goes away? It just does. It changes. Or if someone is mad and you acknowledge something they did, or it just changes the dynamics. Okay, I want to share an experience that I had. This goes back to the mindfulness. I just feel like this is important. When I've spent a lot of time very sick, and sometimes so sick that I'm distressed. It's not the type of sick where you know you're going to get better tomorrow. And the other thing is I've been alone a lot of times in that sickness with my kids around me, but nobody else really to take care of me. And one night in particular, my son was always really cute. My 18-year-old would say, "Mom, I've got my phone on in case you need anything in the night." And my cousin would always say, "Well, I've got my phone on too in case you need anything." My dad's like, "You can call me 24/7. And so this one night, I was quite distressed. I felt awful, and I felt alone. And I was crying, and I'd prayed, and then I'd crawled into bed. And the thought occurred to me to, you know, if I were in the hospital, a loved one would be sitting by my bed and would be there and stand and be there and watch over me and be there to calm and give me strength. And I realized, well, I don't really have that, but I thought to envision the Savior sitting by my bed. And so in that moment, as I began to envision him sitting by my bedside, the tears immediately stopped, and I was enveloped in a cloak of comfort and love, and I fell immediately to sleep and had a beautiful sleep. That's the power of mindfulness, is I just imagined and was mindful of this idea that he was right next to me. And it was very helpful. This is something you can do if you want to imagine yourself in one of the most stressful and hard situations in your life. And then imagine the Savior standing right next to you as you're going through that. It creates a different feeling. So, okay. All right, so here's the next practice. What was beautiful? I was taught this practice last August. It's an awesome practice. I was working with a nurse practitioner on with my health issues on nutrition. And anyway, she was amazing. And one day she said to me, "You know, something that really helps me is this. When I get to the end of the day, rather than go to bed stewing on all of the problems of the day and the things that didn't get solved, I don't know if you're like me, but when I've got a problem going, my mind is going like 90 trying to figure out the maze and solution and try to find things." She said, "Rather than do that at night, take time at night to ask yourself, what was beautiful today? What went well today? And what am I grateful for?" And I love this practice. I have a name for it, but for some reason it's completely slipped my mind. I taught my students this. I think it's jubilation practice. I don't know what it's called, but you can come up with your own name for it. But what is beautiful? What was beautiful today? And then I'll write it down in a little journal, and it totally shifts the feeling. Last fall when I was learning this, I took my kids on, we did a little tiny overnight backpacking trip because my 14-year-old absolutely loves to backpack. And even though I've been so sick, it's like I'm determined not to let them lose 2 years of their lives. If I were just to give up and lay in my bed and wait till I got better, you know, he'd be 16, go from 14 to 16, and what kind of a life would he have? I mean, so we went on this little 1 mile I guess it was a mile and a half backpacking trip. Took my 10-year-old, who'd never been backpacking, and they carried most of my gear, my big boys did. And anyway, we got up there. It was awesome. It was beautiful. Then we went to bed, and I started to I couldn't go to sleep. I was wide awake, just wired. And then I started thinking, we are a mile and a half from civilization. What if something happens? What am I going to do? And so I started getting really afraid, and I was wired. And so then that fight, flight, adrenal kind of stuff started coming in. I couldn't go to sleep. And then I turned to gratitude, and I just began to think about what was beautiful on our hike in, what was beautiful about what happened with our experience. And as I started to do that, the entire feeling in my body and being just shifted, it was powerful. So when you can, it comes from mindfulness. It's actually a purposeful choice to focus on what is beautiful and what is going well versus what's not going well. Anyway, it totally shifted my energy that night and helped me to sleep. However, I did have psychedelic dreams of Indians coming to get us and of floods and I don't know, all kinds of things, but I did fall asleep. So anyway, but what is beautiful? This is a powerful, powerful tool. And I promise you that if you practice it on a regular basis, that your focus in your daily life will be different. It's like, wow, what am I going to write in my What is Beautiful journal tonight? You know, you're going to start looking for what is beautiful. In fact, one of the things that hurts relationships the most, from what I've learned from my coaching experience, is a negative interpretation, a mindset that is completely focused on the negative. So in a relationship, there can be 90 positive things going on in that relationship, and a person who has negative interpretation problems, they will only see the 10 things that were negative. Now, you might have that. I might have that in my homeschooling, only seeing the negative. And how stressful is that? When there's 90 positive things going on, if we start looking for them, it completely shifts the dynamics in our home. If you've got a child who's really hard to manage, and you're constantly saying, be quiet, don't do that, do this, you need to calm down, whatever, they're always hearing negative statements. But when you start to see and catch them in something they're doing well, and you notice that, and you make a big deal out of it, they'll start to move towards more of that. Okay, the next one is spiritual. This is something that's hit a lot in our LDS faith. I'm not going to touch a lot on it, but I can tell you that this one practice, this is the first practice I put into my life. It's the first one I put in, and I started when I was about 10 to read the scriptures on a regular basis. And it gradually grew. And I can't live without these. I just can't. So it's the scripture study. It's not reading. I'm really spoiled. If I can't really study, it's like I don't really want to just read it. But I the perspective I have is that when I open my scriptures, and I've made a priority to make it first thing I do in the morning, my meditation and my scriptures and my prayer, that I'm opening the scriptures, and what I'm really saying to the Lord is, here I am. I want to hear your voice. I want to feel your spirit, and I want to be wrapped in the arms of your love, and I want you to show me how to live my life. That's when the promptings come. That's when clarity comes. That's when I feel grounded for the rest of the day. And I've worked with a lot of women who I'll say, well, how are your spiritual practices? Well, I don't have much time, so I just read scriptures with the kids. That won't cut it. You need quiet, absolute quiet time by yourself. And I suggest 30 to 45 minutes. If you can't do 30 to 45, do 15. But I just think it takes time for the spirit to work and for us to calm, and that include, you know, and to get into the prayer as well. I read a fabulous Christian book about prayer a couple years ago. Totally changed the way I thought about prayer, and I can just see that prayer is so powerful. And I don't pray very powerfully at night. I just don't, but I do pray better in the morning. So anyway, but these are really powerful. So what I do with my scripture study is I add to it journal writing. So I might study a chapter in the Book of Mormon or a conference talk, and then I write about it. And the minute I put my pen to the paper, something shifts, and I begin to learn on a deeper level. I have stacks and stacks of scripture journals that I've kept over the last 40 years. So it's, well, 30 years, something like that. Okay, I'm not going to go much into that, but I can tell you that this is the foundation, and it has kept me. People ask me, I don't know how you've lived through this. I said, this is how I've gotten through this or that or the other. Okay, the next one is to nourish and cherish yourself. Okay, you have to feed your body. You have to care for your body, and you need to figure your body out. Okay, if you're tired all the time, your body's giving you information. It's either not getting enough rest, not getting enough nutrients. Listen to your body. If you're edgy all the time, there's something going on in your physiology, and you can get help for that. And so take care of it. And again, remember the marathoner versus the sprinter. You're in this for a long haul. And so the way it happens in nature is, like, if a rabbit gets chased by a wolf or a fox, and they'll go for the chase, they'll do the chase, and then the rabbit gets away, and it'll hide under a bush, and it will shake. It'll just sit there and shake. And it'll just stay there in that calm place, I mean, in that bush for an hour or two or three until its body system is calmed completely down. In our society, we drive so hard that we'll go from one stressful situation to the other, such, and to the next, without that time to just come down and go, okay, let's just let it pass. One of the things that, two things on this, is that I see in women this inability to take time out for yourself. So for me, I realized that I was not happy if I didn't take a break. And so I started to institute Friday afternoons. I took the Friday afternoons off. Sometimes the whole day I took off. I did that for quite a while, and then we got an activity for one of the kids on that day, so I haven't been doing it very well. But you need to find a time in the week that you can take time off from everybody, even your spouse, just time alone, time to go shopping if you want, time to go to the library if you want, time to go on a walk if you want, time when you don't need to nurture or take care of anybody else, you just get to be alone. I promise this is a needful thing, as much as we fight it. You also need to you need to feed your soul. I give you the challenge to go home and ask yourself, what do I love? And put it all out. What do I love? What kinds of foods do I love? What kind of activities do I love? What makes me, you know, just floats my boat, okay? Whatever that is. Because as I work with women and they're stressed and they're burned out, I'll say, well, what do you love to do? And they'll say, if they've been at it a long time, like 10, 20 years, 15 years, I'll say, I don't remember. I can't remember what I love to do. I said, you need to figure that out. And so I worked with one woman, and she said, well, I love to sing. I said, well, what could you do about that? Well, I've been wanting to go back to the word choir. Great, go back to the word choir. And she did. She said, I really love to travel. And I'm kind of mad at my husband because his job lets him travel, but I don't get to travel. I said, well, what trip can you take? Create a trip. And she did. She drove across from Virginia to California to visit her grandma, who was getting old, and she took some of her kids with her, had a great time. You need to put into your life what you love. Otherwise, you will become dull, and dull moms aren't fun. Okay? And what's really fun is when something you love is something one of your kids loves. Like my son Caleb and I climb mountains together. My son Hiram loves to backpack, so we backpack, and we kind of all do it. And my older son loves to rock climb, so we rock climb. And Hannah and I like to read books, and I like to read books, and we're still working on some of the things that she loves and I love together. So anyway, so it's awesome. In this is the word harmony. What is your rhythm? Like, if you could have your ideal day, what would it look like? And I figured out that for me, it really feels so nice if I get up and have time for my spiritual practices, and we have breakfast, we have our little devotional, and then we work, and we clean the house and for the third hour or whatever that we do it. And then we just putter, and I love to just put things in order, and then I'm ready to sit down, be calm, and learn. But for years, I've tried to do it. So we got to do school first, and we leave the chores to the afternoon, and nobody wants to do anything in the afternoon. Chore-wise, and so it's a hard thing to find, but I've been thinking about what works for me versus always adapting to what works for everybody else. So think about what's harmonious to you. Okay, last one, acceptance, non-resistance, surrender. With my illness, I had to accept it. For the first months, I kept my running shoes and my hiking shoes out where I could see them. I kept my hope and my dream to be able to climb some mountains that year alive. And I wasn't sure. I was trying to have a positive attitude. But eventually, I had to just accept the fact that going on a walk was what I could do, even if it was just 5 minutes. Sometimes just going to the grocery store was all I could do as far as exercise. I had to learn to accept it. I had to learn to embrace it. I had to learn to be grateful for it and to learn what I could from it. So, and when I did that, the whole experience changed. It became actually joyful. It became easy. It became happy. Remember when I was in labor with my fourth, it was a VBAC. And so we were kind of in uncharted waters. And it was a 36-hour labor. And when I look back on it, the worst thing about it was I thought it needed to go faster. I was resisting the natural process that my body and this baby was taking, thinking it's got to go faster. Why is it taking so long? And the contractions were 10 to 15 minutes apart for 30 hours of it. I mean, it's not like I was dying. I was okay. But my mindset was it has to look different. It has to go faster. And if I could have just been okay with where it was and accepted it and surrendered to it, I think I would have had the baby at hour 20, but I just couldn't. I resisted it. So, use that as an example. And I'm not going to talk more about that. I do want to address very quickly, and then I'll close. If you feel like you have depression or you're struggling with depression, there are places you can get help. That's something I've struggled with. If you feel burned out, you need to do something about it. Any of these would be great, especially taking a time out. I mean, just going somewhere. If you have health issues, if you're sleep deprived, I went through years of sleep deprivation. Most of you have too, right? Be compassionate with yourself. Let yourself take a nap. Let it be okay to put everything down and just be. If you have hormone issues, I had those after my fifth baby. Couldn't, and just like all of a sudden start screaming. I was like, I'm not a screamer. I'd go pray. Help me not to scream. Well, scream. Okay, help me not to pray. Screaming. Help me not to pray. So I needed some physical help. So I went to see a practitioner that helped me with that. And then also realize that the people you are with can drain you. And what you're doing, it drains your energy. You need time to renew and recharge. So take that time and create that time. If you'd like to talk further with me about things like depression and burnout and anxiety, those kinds of things, you're welcome to come up and talk with me, or I'll be out in the hallway and I can talk more personally with you about those things. I found some great solutions for me that aren't medication, and they're working awesome. So in fact, with my condition, I found out that if I had taken medication, it would have made it worse. So in closing, two things. Like the Liahona, meditation and other practices work on the principles of faith and diligence. Faith equals I can do this and God will respond. And diligence is I will practice daily in spite of difficulties. So whatever practice you choose, circle it and be committed to practicing it on a daily basis. Be diligent, show up, and practice it. You're not going to do it perfectly and it's not going to feel perfect every day. And the other one is I can do this and God will respond. That's faith. I want to close just by saying that it's possible to choose still. It's possible to choose out of stress. I got stressed getting prepared to come on Wednesday to this conference, and in an instant I had the opportunity to choose out of the stress and realize that was just my response. It was a stress response. I was choosing to be stressed. And I chose out of it, and everything calmed down. It was awesome. But I want to testify to you of the power of the Savior's atonement to help us learn to be still. And I want you to know that that is how I am learning to be still. My heart inclines and turns to Him repeatedly, especially when my emotions go up or when I feel that stressful feeling coming or I feel distressed in any way. I ask for His help, and I want to testify of the enabling and empowering and the healing power of the atonement. It is real and we need it. And that's why it's okay if we don't do things perfectly. It's okay if we make mistakes. It's okay if we're learning by our experience through trial and error, because that's why we have a Savior and we need Him. And if we, recently, I have struggled with depression because through all of this. And one morning in May, I woke up and I could feel the depression hitting me in the evening. And I woke up the next morning and all I wanted to do was to lay and look at the wall. And I could have been there all day. But I realized I have children. I have a family. And that's not really the response I want. And that's not really the response that works. So all I did was cry out to God and ask Him, please help me. And then an idea came to my mind, go for a walk. I got up and I went for a very gentle walk because that's what I was up to. While I was walking, I had the impression to call my dad. So I called my dad. My dad's awesome. We started to talk. He's very edifying to talk with. We talked and we talked and we talked. He said, I think it'd be really good for you to read this conference talk. It was by Elder Bednar, the enabling power of the atonement, right? So then I went back home and I read the talk. And by the time I'd finished all of those, I was ready to face the day. And I had the energy and the strength to do it. So friends, it's about asking for His help. It's about listening to the response that comes and doing it. And I promise you, He will help you to learn to be still. So again, if you have any questions or want to talk with me, I'll be out in the hallway. And if you ever want to email me, I do coach and I do mentor. And my email is angelabakerspeaks@gmail.com. So thanks.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.